I do have a quick video that I want to start with. I don't know how many of you are history buffs, but there was a king a long time ago called King Canute. And here's a little ditty about King Canute.
Okay, shoot.
This movie will be based on the epic story of my life. Canute, Danish King of England.
Danish? Uh-oh.
Subtitles.
Not gonna work.
Won't work.
Couldn't you be the English King of Denmark?
No, because I am the Danish King of England and of Denmark and of Norway, actually.
I know you. Weren't you the guy who thought he could turn back the tide but ended up getting his feet wet?
Here we go.
Uh-oh. Soggy socks.
I hate that.
How about instead of King Canute,
King Dumb?
Great title. King Dumb and Queen Dumber. It's a sequel.
I wasn't dumb. I didn't believe that I could actually turn back the tide. I was making a point to my followers. They thought I was so powerful that even the seas obeyed me. I was just proving to them that only God can command the tides.
So everybody else was dumb.
World of dumb.
Genius.
In a world where everyone was dumb, King Dumb was the dumbest.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey?
No, this movie is about how one brave, wise, reasonably attractive warrior united three kingdoms with the power of his sword. Everyone feared him. The warrior king who brought peace this summer. Canute the Great!
Canute the Great Big Idiot.
Subtitle?
King Dumb Canute the Great Big Idiot.
King Dumb Canute the Great Big Idioter.
It's a franchise.
Do you know what? I'm going to take this somewhere else, though.
Oh, it's actually the other way.
Laters!
Oh! That guy's hilarious.
He's comedy.
Funny, funny guy.
Okay, now I don't know if you could hear the video all that well, but King Canute, what he had done is brought three people groups together and brought a unified nation of England. He was the first one to do that. And all his cabinet and his courtiers thought he was so powerful, anything he said would happen. But he was a godly man. He knew that it was all given to him by the hand of God. So what he did is he took his throne and he put it on the sands of the sea. And he said, I command the sea to stop rolling forward. And as the tide came in, he got wet. He then commenced to set his crown on the throne and walked to a church, humbled himself before the Lord, and left his kingship. Because he had understood that all things come from the hand of God. And he was a godly man. He would not take the accolades and the things that God would have for himself. So that was the story of King Canute. And I think it's going to take you right into a little bit of what goes awry in our story today. We're going to talk about King Uzziah, and first though I want to give you a little bit of background on his father, who is King Amaziah. And he was the king of Judah, and it says in 2 Chronicles 25 that he followed the God but not wholeheartedly. He had forgotten that God raised him and put him in a place of power, and eventually fell out. And he raises this son who we're going to read about now, who's King Uzziah in Chronicles. And in Kings, they call him King Azariah. So I don't want you to confuse the two. But I'm going to read a story of his life. And it's one chapter, and it's a sad chapter and story in the Bible. But there's three things, there's three G's, I think, that will often entrap Christians in their glory, guys or girls, and gold. So you got money, relationships with other people, and then glory, which is a pride thing that often entrap us and will ensnare us in life. And a big outcome happened here with King Uzziah. So if you'll read with me, in 2 Chronicles 26, we're going to read the whole chapter. It says, then all the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in place of his father Amaziah. He was the one who rebuilt Elath and restored it to Judah after Amaziah rested with his fathers. Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 52 years, the second longest reign of any king. His mother's name was Jechaliah, and she was from Jerusalem. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father Amaziah had done. He sought God during the days of Zechariah, who instructed him in the fear of God. As long as he sought the Lord, God gave him success. He went to war against the Philistines and broke down the walls of Gath, Jabneh, and Ashdod. He then rebuilt towns near Ashdod and elsewhere among the Philistines. God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabs, who who lived in Gerbal and against the Meunites. The Ammonites brought tribute to Uzziah, and his fame spread as far as the border of Egypt because he had become very powerful. Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate, at the valley gate, and at the angle of the wall, and he fortified them. He also built towers in the desert and dug many cisterns because he had much livestock in the foothills and in the plain. He had people working his fields and vineyards in the hills and in the fertile lands, for he loved the soil. Uzziah had a well-trained army ready to go out by divisions according to the numbers as mustered by Jael, the secretary of Messiah, the officer under the direction of Hananiah, one of the royal officials. The total number of the family leaders among the fighting men was 2,600. Under their command was an army of 307,500 men trained for war, a powerful force to support the king against his enemies. Uzziah provided shields, spears, helmets, coats of armor, bows and sling stones for the entire army. In Jerusalem, he made machines designed by skillful men for use on the towers and on the corner defenses to shoot arrows and hurl large stones. His fame spread far and wide, for he was greatly helped until he became powerful. But after Uzziah became powerful, his pride led to his downfall. He was unfaithful to the Lord his God and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Azariah the priest, with 80 other courageous priests of the Lord, followed him in. They confronted him and said, "It is not right for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord. That is for the priests, the descendants of Aaron, who have been consecrated to burn incense. Leave the sanctuary, for you have been unfaithful, and you will not be honored by the Lord God." Uzziah, who had a censer in his hand ready to burn incense, became angry. While he was raging at the priest in the presence before the incense altar in the Lord's temple, leprosy broke out on his forehead. When Azariah the chief priest and all the other priests looked at him, they saw that he had leprosy on his forehead, so they hurried him out. Indeed, he himself was eager to leave because the Lord had afflicted him. King Uzziah had leprosy until the day he died. He lived in a separate house, leprous and excluded from the temple of the Lord. Jotham, his son, had charge of the palace and governed the people of the land. The other events in Uzziah's reign from beginning to end are recorded by the prophet Isaiah, son of Amos. Uzziah rested with his fathers and was buried near them in the field for burial that belonged to the kings and people. He had leprosy, and Jotham, his son, succeeded him as king. A lot to be said and preached on in the story. I want to bring 4 points to you. But first of all, let's just go back and pull out some of the small details of that story that, if you study it deeper, are cool to understand. He did follow a flip-floppy father. I just made up a word again. But his dad, and how many of us in life truly, we see things that our parents do, we go, "I'm never going to be like that." But one day we find ourselves being just like that. So it's a whole lot of things haven't changed. Is my son Garrett in here? Can you stand up? Here's a 16-year-old man. How many of us would say, "Son, I want you to run the nation"? We all get behind him going, "That's my man." It's scary to think, isn't it? Not for me, because I'd follow you. With the belt. No, go ahead, sit down. But truly, this was a young man that was given a great responsibility. And he did it pretty well. He reigns for 50 years. In 25, we were a co-regent with his father, but he was growing and learning how to do it. And it was the second longest reign amongst the kings. And he rebuilt the city of Elath, they talk about, but it was huge because this was a city that had been fought for over 200 years from King David up to his time from the Philistines and others, and it was a strategic location because it was on the north shore of the Gulf of Aqaba, and it's where ports were, it's where the travel routes from Arabia came around, so it was a major hub of commerce and place of importance, and it had always been destroyed, and he has it built back up. King Solomon at one point had a navy base there along with giant smelting, copper smelting plants, which was important back then because smelting gave you metals, which gave you weapons. So this was a really strategic city, and he rebuilt it, and that was a big thing. It wouldn't be recorded if it wasn't. So this guy was really smart, and The one part, if you read the parallel account in 2 Kings 15, it says, too, that he did not tear down the altars of other gods. So he had a failure, just like his father did, of not staying dedicated to the Lord. Now, his mother, they just throw this in there, if you ever wonder, why did they just throw a name in the middle of there? But her name means, if you study it, it means Jehovah is strong. So they put that in there because names truly did mean something, and you're to assume and to know that she raised him in the ways of the Lord. So he was raised, all you mamas can take heart in this, she did her job. He didn't listen. He was a bad boy. And he walked away from some of the things of the Lord, but he also had a mentor, if you read that, Zechariah, who walked beside him. And when Zechariah was mentoring and helping him through, he did the things right. He followed the Lord in all things, and God prospered him. It tells us that he conquered many cities and that some paid tribute. If you don't know what that means, it's a way of inferior clans of people or towns saying, don't annihilate us, we'll pay you. And that's what he did. He would take the pay, and it helped the kingdom survive. But he was a very strong and wealthy king, which was new since the time of David and Solomon. They had lost a little bit of their greatness, but he started bringing it back. His military might was almost as great as David's, not quite, but he was an amazing architect. As I was studying the scripture, the walls were built in such a way that they had not found in any other country or any other town. He built them in sort of a zigzag cross, sort of a crossfire type mentality, whereas before they would just be walls with little ramparts on the corners. But he built it, and he was a very strategic mind for these giant weapons. They talk about they were like catapults of throwing large arrows and large stones. So he had a really sharp mind. It says he even built outposts out in the desert to forewarn them if attack was coming. So we say all this, and he was a great farmer. He led the way and made prosper happen because of irrigation that he did and had engineered for them. So this guy was like a modern-day Thomas Edison or a Ben Franklin. He was a really, really smart guy. And with really, really smart people comes the tendency to get ahead of yourself and think that you're the man. And that's what happened with King Uzziah. So the first point I wanted to make is he let his self-image become greater than it should have. There's that part, I think, in all of us that as things become well with us and as we become successful in whatever points in life, sometimes we can take our focus off of who hand it's come from. Anybody ever been in that place like me? Where you think, I'm a hard worker, I can do this and that, and we forget that we're put in that position and we're given the talents and abilities that we have from the Lord. And it's real easy to start slipping into places we shouldn't go. Verse 16 says, tragedy hits and pride seeped in. When pride creeps into our life, it has that tendency to erode the soil under a solid foot. Does that make sense? Pride is that one that's, it's a slippery slope to get on, because it's always the first step in the fall. That almost sounds biblical, doesn't it? Pride cometh before the fall. That's sort of what happened here. And we have to always be careful in our walk, because Uzziah let pride creep in. C.S. Lewis, who I love to read, writes this in one of his books about pride. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride leads to every other vice. It is complete anti-God state of mind. As long as you are proud, you cannot know God. A proud man is looking down on things and people, and of course, as long as you are looking down, you cannot see something that is above you. Does that make sense? If we're looking down at other people and things in life, we can't look up to see the one that needs to keep us in check. And that's important to remember. We start to think, and King Uzziah started to think, that it was him and the whole universe revolved around him. That he made the rules, that he can make things happen, that he was the one put in charge for a reason, and he was going to take charge and not relinquish it back to the one that gave him the charge. And it's important in all of us to stay humble, I think, in the face of success. As you succeed in things, we have to remember always that God gives it to us, and God can take it away. That's what often we forget, and we fail prey to. Because God wants us to succeed, but he always wants us to be reliant on him. He truly wants to be the center of our lives and the center of the universe, because he is. the center of the universe. He's the one that designed everything. And when we go off course of that, we lose that sense of humble, broken heart, and we start taking upon ourselves that we think we're the cause of all these things. So just always remember, is all good things come from the hand of the Lord. There's so many things in this, I could have preached for 10 hours, but I won't. The second point is, King Uzziah usurped God's order of things. God puts people in place of authority, tells us that. He said, I put kings and rulers in place. Well, in this story, he put the king in place. And if you remember back when King Saul became the first king, they went out and they had to anoint somebody. You remember that? They all cried out they wanted a king. Well, God anointed them. But God also, earlier, had anointed priests over the nation. So they have two people. It was sort of like a checks and balance type thing that we have in our government. But God set it up that way because if either party had too much power, the pride goes to the head and they can lead the people astray. So God had this checks and balance system. And you can see as we read through the story that he sort of tried to go around it. He tried to circumvent it. He tried to do things his own way because he thought he was the man. He was a glory stealer. That's one of the three G's. He wanted part of the glory that belonged to the priest, which was given to God, and he wanted it for himself. That pride, that sort of, anybody ever try to do that? Pat yourself on the back when you've done something right? That's what King Uzziah was doing. He was like, I think I can do what the priests are supposed to do, but I can do it better. And there's a myriad of reasons why, and I got a lot of questions here. Why would a guy with such promise, because it sounds like he had a lot of good things going on in life, right? He did a lot of really good things, but why would somebody with that much promise go down that path? And as I was pondering, I just came up with some ideas, and maybe they're right, maybe they're not, but I look at even in our own lives and people that I've seen go before us that he might have seen his father that his fall came about because he turned his heart from the Lord. So he was going to make sure he didn't do what his father had done and did the pendulum swing, right? His father sort of forsake the Lord, and he said, I'm going to press in and do it more. That pendulum swing in our minds, and what happens in Christianity a lot of times, you'll see it in churches and in people's lives. They go from one extreme to the other. There should be the nice balance of right in the middle, that sanctified and right. But often we take what looked wrong in our parents or other people we've seen. We say, I'm not going to do that. And we go so far to the other extreme that we find ourselves in a place of sin as well. And we always got to be careful of these traps. I got down here. We're not all that smart either, are we? You would think that this guy being that smart wouldn't fall prey to all these things. But we often think we're smarter than we really are. But there's a big part, too, I was thinking about that. When pride and sin creep in our lives, if you hold on to it or don't repent to it, to be okay with it, you have to sort of tuck it away or hide it. And when that starts happening, what you do is you isolate yourself from others around you because you don't want them to point out that you might be wrong or something's amiss, and you want to remain right in your own mind, so you distance yourself from everybody that's right. He had Zechariah and some priests try to stop him, but he didn't want to hear the word. He had backed off and was like, no, I'm okay in doing what I wanted to do. And a lot of us, we struggle with that. We struggle with letting people speak in our lives. I think we need to have people in our lives that will speak truth to us or step on our toes, as I like to say, because we all have these tendencies, don't we? The enemy's not using anything new with us. The same tricks have been there since he was the beginner of all lies. And he just keeps using them and bringing them at us in different ways. So what we have to understand is these traps are out there and they're hidden, but we got to be aware of them and not let certain things happen and invite people and be teachable in all things, or we'll be isolated. And you know, when you're isolated, I use it all the time, you're the one that gets picked off. The enemy always goes after the weak and those that are alone. Pastor just preached about this on Father's Day about men. We need to have other men in our lives to surround us with. Women, you do the same thing. Kids, same thing. You need to have godly people around you to help you see the things coming in life. I believe he thought he could offer incense better. I really do believe that, and you see it today in society, in all areas of society, where, now I'll just use sports as an example because I love sports, but you watch a lot of these guys that come from nothing and all of a sudden they're multimillionaires with people adoring them and all of a sudden they become bigger than the law. Has it ever amazed you that people that seem like they have everything end up in jail or kicked out of the league or whatever because they thought they were above the law? They think things that apply to everybody else don't apply to them because they're above that. They can buy their way out, but we got to know that when God says your sins will find you out and pride comes before the fall, it always happens. His word always remains true. Maybe in an attempt to become not to become idolatrous like his father, he became discontented with the position God had chose for him and wanted to be closer. God gave him the position of kingship. And what I'm saying in this is he wanted to be king and priest. That wasn't his position. The only other person besides Christ that we really see that was David and Jesus, that God had them be both. And I think David was setting the right example, and God allowed him till he fell from grace. But Christ did it rightly, and so did Melchizedek. But there's an element that he needed to be content with what we have. But human nature, if you go back to the Garden of Eden, they had a God-given authority and right over the garden, and they were to tend it. But they became discontented with their position too. Because remember, he told them, you can eat of any tree, but if you eat of the tree of what? The tree of knowledge, right? And you'll know good and evil like we did. They wanted to know what God knew. They were discontented with not knowing. They wanted something that he only had. And the same thing here. Do you see how the tricks just morph and change? That's what happened to this guy. He fell prey to one of the enemy's schemes. The third point is King Uzziah lost the ability to hear God's voice. He was not willing to accept correction, instruction, or wise counsel. Now, I bring this point out because in Christianity, as I've already said, sometimes we don't want people meddling in our lives. And now there are some meddlers, don't get me wrong. There are people that just want to, they're critics and cynics more than they are helpers. But if you have godly people that you respect and you trust, give them permission to speak in your life. It will only help you. And if they're doing it in love and they're doing it with grace, we'll be able to receive it and be taught and be better for it. But if you don't, God has trouble speaking because he speaks to us through his word, through his spirit, but he also will speak to you through people. Why wouldn't he? That's who he decides to change the world with, right? We have a mission to bring people to Christ and to make disciples. He obviously desires to use us, but I think King Uzziah said, how could he use other people when I'm the man? I should be the one that's speaking to them. And we all have to remember we're not the man or the woman. We have to let God speak to us through people. Now, the brave priests tried to do their part. You had 81 priests who went to the king, and the reason I say brave is you got to remember this is not that far removed from when King Saul had all the priests wiped out because they didn't agree with him. This is just a couple hundred years later, and these priests are going, man, we remember that story. If we confront this guy, he could whack us. But they had, I don't know what the word in Hebrew would be, but they had the gumption or the boldness to go and try to stop them. They feared God more than man. That's a good thing. How many of us realize fearing God above all things? Because King Uzziah had lost the fear of the Lord. These guys had it, and they confronted him, not caring if their life would be taken or not, but they were going to confront this king. They told him, you can't do this. And it says in there that he raged against them. He raged against 80 men of known character. If I could have 80 of my mature men in this place and they come up and tell me wrong, I'm wrong about something, I'm not going to go off on them, I promise you. I'm going to listen to what they say because I figure 80-1 makes them right and not me. I might actually be right, but I would probably sway the other way. I'd go, okay, I'll take your word on it. You're right, I'm wrong, I'll change. Just because I'm a simpleton that way. But he raged at the priest, and it wasn't a real spirit of teachability. Is that a word? He thought he was the one that could teach them something, and he was going to do it his way or the highway. And you can see how easily we are deceived by the old forbidden fruit thing. He wanted to do what God told him he couldn't do. He wanted to have something that God once again said, this isn't yours to have. But he wanted it because he lost the ability to hear, even though they were right in his face, telling him, you can't have it. He still thought he was okay with getting it. The last point is, God will only allow us to trample on grace so long. How many of us know God's loving patience leads to our salvation? But how many of you understand there's also a point when he says you should know better? And you see that in this story. The result of this type of behavior is never has a good outcome. Any of you ever had one of those struggles in life? You're struggling with something, you keep doing the same thing, it happens over and over, and you just keep going back wanting to beat your tongue with a hammer or something. And you truly just keep going there, and you're going, Lord, I don't know why I keep doing this, I don't know why. And eventually he says, I don't know why you do it either, and here's the consequences of your behavior. And then we go, Lord, I really don't like the consequences of this behavior. Can you take them from me? And what does he say at that point? You got to live with them. Because you should have known better. I tried to warn you. I tried to teach you. I tried to speak to you through other people. Here's the ramifications of what happens to you. Now, he could have stopped right when the 80 came to him and repented and left and been fine. But he didn't. He thought, again, that anyone else was wrong. He was the only one that was right. And I don't know about any of you, but when I am in that place of fighting the Lord on something, it never has turned out right. Now, it might for you. Anybody want to try it? If you do and you want to keep trying it, come back and let us know the outcome. Because we love testimony, if you'd be willing to share it. Because it's one of those humbling things. And it's because we're going against God's plan. And whenever God has a plan and what he says is right, it's right. So if you're fighting the Lord on something, let me give you a clue. This is the best advice I can give you. Go to the Word, see what he says, and do it. Does that make sense? Just go before him, say, Lord, what is it you have for my life? What is it you want me to do? And I'll do it. I guarantee the outcome will be what you want. You will be better on the other side of it than if you struggle and fail. Going back to King Uzziah, the historian Josephus reports that he threatened them. This is from accounts that he had, word of mouth. But he records in his book, The Histories of the Jews, that he threatened them with the death as they opposed him. And right then the earth shook, the roof of the temple opened, and through the cleft a beam of light struck his head, wherein leprosy appeared. Now, most scholars believe, because this is recorded in Amos 1:1 and Zechariah 14:5 as well, they record an earthquake. Now, they didn't record every little earthquake, but this one they did record. This was a big earthquake. Now, if it coincided with that, we really don't know. They believe it really did because it's recorded in three different places. So the Lord proved the big point. And I think a lot of times when the Lord wants to prove stuff, he does stuff like that. Do you remember back when he spoke to him on the mountain and it shook and it trembled? Says when he's coming back again at the crucifix, do you remember the earth shook and it went dark and it broke open, the curtain was rent from top to bottom? Says when he's coming again, he's going to lay the mountains bare. He shows that he has power over nature at times. So I have no reason to not believe what the scholars say about this one, but I think it's sort of a neat image. Here you go, you got the temple breaking, a little ceiling, boom, light hits him and leprosy breaks out. At this point, do you think he's going, oh no. How many of us have ever been in that place? I was in this place a lot as a kid. When you overstepped the place of authority with someone, and you're going, uh-oh, I just crossed that line, I shouldn't have went. And my dad had this way of just looking at you when you did it. And it would still just send a shiver down my spine. It was like, oh, no. There's no recourse at this point. I just crossed the barrier. And then the consequences commenced. And that's, I think, what he said, because it says the priest put him out, but as you study the word, it's actually, if you go to the literal translation, he ran out of the temple. He knew he had crossed God. At that point, he had feared him enough. He had enough stored up in his mind. I think a lot of this goes back to raise your children up in the Lord, and so that when they get old, they won't turn far from it. I think he had enough of the word and the law memorized that he knew he just turned far from it. and that he needed to be brought back into a place where he's standing. So he runs out of the presence because I think he understood he could spurn men, powerful men, whether they be in politics, sports, whatever. They think they're above what other men would say, so they don't necessarily have to listen. But I think he understood he couldn't spurn, and even that's not right. But I think he thought he could spurn God, but God showed him that he couldn't. So there's a few things that go along with this, and I'll just go through a list here, the bottom one. Whenever we sin, God has a way of using our sin to correct us. It's like seeing our face in a mirror. Does that make sense? And look at some of the ones that happened in this story as you read through it. See if you can recall this. Pride was the bottom of his transgressions, but God humbled and put him in a place of dishonor. Do you see how pride is one, and he humbled him in the other? There's a direct consequence to his sin. He invaded the office of the priest, and they in turn were the ones to invade his reign, for they judged his leprosy and made the announcement of unclean. So the ones that he said, I can do your job better, they had to say, now you're not able to do your job. He forced his way into the temple locations. He was trying to go into the Holy of Holies, where only the priests were allowed, but that banned him at that point from coming into the temple at all. Up to that point, anybody could worship outside of the Holy of Holies. And he now wasn't even able to enter the temple at all. So the very place he thought he wanted to be, God removed him for good from it. He confronted the priest with anger and rage, and God's anger broke out against him. You don't fool with God's anger, people. It's not the right place to be. He invaded the dignity of the priest, which he had no right to do, and he is deprived of his royal dignity. You hear that at the end when he died, it says he was born or he was buried outside the tombs. He wasn't even allowed to be buried where all the other kings were because you were unclean at that point and you weren't allowed to be with the kings. So 52 years he served, and I think he served semi-well up to a certain point, but it all went down in flames. It's a heart-breaking story if you think about it. But when we covet forbidden honors or glory, we forfeit our allotted ones, the blessings of God's will. If we think that we want what God doesn't want us to have, that we're going to get blessings from it, you lose every single time. We have to be content with what God's called us to and know in our hearts and our minds what he wants to give us and what he wants us to become and what we are to do. Whenever we want to become a Pastor Dan or somebody else or a priest or whatever, and we think that's what we want, and we forget to go after what God's designed us to be, you'll find that you forego blessings every time. King Uzziah had forgot that. Conclusion is how to stay away from glory stealing and the traps of pride. We need to live in the fear of the Lord. That's where all wisdom starts. That's where all right living comes from, is always understanding that he's right there watching. He's right there waiting for us to do the things that are right. He's not the mean ogre in the sky waiting to bang us on the head like that game at Chuck E. Cheese. You ever see the little gophers pop their head out of the thing and kids bash it? That's not God. He's not waiting for that to happen. He's back there applauding us, wanting us to do the good things. And he desires us to do good things, and he wants to pour blessings in our lives, but we oftentimes want to do it the hard way. Always remember that provisions and life itself come from the hand of God. These are pretty easy ways to avoid falling into the glory trap and letting pride become a big part of your life. Always reflect glory back to God. Worship team, you can start coming forward. We're going to do communion here in a minute. What's that? What'd they say? Oh, start coming forward. I'm thinking about stuff here. Okay, start coming forward. Always reflect glory back to God. Now, what I'm not saying is if somebody applauds you for doing what you're supposed to be doing, it's okay to be proud in Christ, to say, I've done a good job, I know it's what's God, but all glory be given to him. We don't need to be self-effacing, we're lower than dirt. That's not what I'm saying by not stealing God's glory. You're able and he wants us to be victorious in who he is. So just always remain humble. Here's the big one. Learn to listen. Listen to others. It's a great way to grow. It's a great way to remain humble. How many of us know that you can learn from even your enemies? Okay? Too many people forget that. We'll only want to learn and be taught by those who like us. Well, that's easy. Anybody can do that. It's when you're the enemy or other people that might not like you so much tell you stuff. We often get offended and say, there's no truth to that. Guess what? There's always a grain of truth in something. So just be willing to be taught in all areas, and you'll live out life without regret. Because I think King Uzziah, it truly is a heart-wrenching. I mean, it touches you deep, saying, man, it just seems like a life is wasted. I mean, his epitaph was, he died with leprosy. All the great things, you don't hear that. I mean, you've heard the one, you know, you build 1,000 bridges, you do one thing, and what do they remember you for? You see history repeat itself. I mean, Joel Paterno, this guy had a life of giving and helping and everything else, and the fall with, I forget the guy's name now. Yeah, okay, so what is Joel Paterno going to remember for? All the good things or the fall? And I'm saying we need to run the race to the end to win. Pastor Sam Mayo, he's out of Dallas. I listen to him a lot on the internet. It says, they'll remember, he says in one of his sermons, they'll remember how you left, not how you came in. And that's huge to understand. If we run the race with the broken and contrite heart, we'll win the prize. We'll hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. If we let pride and other things entrap us, and envelop us, I think we all want to hear one thing when we stand before the Lord, and it's, well done, my good and faithful servant. But we need to stay the course. We need to stay on track. We need to listen to the Lord, do all these things we've already talked about, so that we don't find ourselves being tricked.